सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। ॐ मे वी मेडिटेट ऑन दैट सुप्रीम बीइंग हु ड्वेल्स इन द हार्ट्स ऑफ ऑल। He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamani, or the crest jewel of this nation, by the great seer philosopher Shankara. Just now I was reminded of an incident that Maharaj, my master, said to us regarding Swami Vivekananda. He said, we are all seated together, just the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna seated together, and they were having just fun, talking mundane matters, joking. And then suddenly Swamiji got into a mood and he said, Brahman is everywhere. See Brahman. Can't you see him? And Maharaj said, as he spoke, in a way he helped to lift our consciousness, and we all experienced Brahman everywhere. Now, of course, we must consider that all these disciples had already become knowers of Brahman. In the first place, their guru, Sri Ramakrishna, by their touch, by his touch, gave them that experience. And as I gathered from their talks occasionally, Sri Ramakrishna gave them many kinds of spiritual experiences, visions and experiences. One time, Swami Vijñānananda, another disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, he said that in the Bhagavatam you read about Rasa Lila, Sri Krishna playing with the gopis, which is often so much misunderstood. And Swami Vijñānananda said, Sri Ramakrishna was the center and we were circling around him, the disciples, and we are all meditating. And Sri Ramakrishna lifted their consciousness to such height that they experienced the taste of bliss, the love, from the love that the gopis had for Sri Krishna. Now these are unique things, most unique that we find in the life of Ramakrishna. And so let us consider that these disciples were all knowers of Brahman. And then again, here is the most interesting point. They again practiced hard spiritual disciplines, every one of them. and crying for God, weeping for God. And one great soul again who visited, who used to visit Ramakrishna, but he was not a disciple of Ramakrishna, but he was a man of God, Vijay Krishna Goswami. When Maharaj was practicing hard, severe spiritual discipline, 16, 18, 20 hours making japam and meditation, didn't know how the days and nights passed. Another disciple of Ramakrishna would go and beg alms, beg food for him. And he said, "Don't disturb me. Leave the food somewhere there." And some days, he did not touch the food even. He was so absorbed. So they were, naturally, when Swamiji said like that, their minds were lifted into that consciousness. But it doesn't happen with us. We have to practice the spiritual discipline. See, simply saying God is within each one of us, the Atman is here. I am that Atman. I am one with God. Simply saying that doesn't help. We have to practice spiritual discipline. Practice chanting the name of God for hours and hours every day. You have to meditate and meditate and meditate. We have to do the duties of life, work selflessly, and offer the fruits of our actions to God every day. In other words, we must learn and struggle to keep recollectedness of God no matter how we can do, how we do it. First, one has to experience the joy that comes, the sweetness that is experienced by just chanting the name of God. That name of God has a sweetness. And you have to experience that, and you don't experience just by talking about it or reading about it. Just today I was reading a letter that Maharaj had written to a disciple, and he said, so to a household disciple, he wrote this letter, and he said, "Remember, the name of God and God are inseparable, and be absorbed chanting the name of God. Continue chanting the name of God. Continue as often until it becomes something, a current within you." So first, bhajanananda, the bliss, the happiness, the joy that comes chanting the name of God. By meditating, by thinking of Him, you get a thrill. That has to come before you have any experience of vision or go beyond vision again. You have to. In other words, do something about it. Then only the ignorance disappears. You see, this ignorance is from a beginningless time, this ignorance has got hold of us. I am the Atman. Brahman is there. That's my true being. But that has been covered. And he feels. I am so and so. I am so many years old. You see, identifying ourselves with the body, mind, senses, sense organs. Our minds are there in the objects of the world. We have to take away our mind from these sense objects and place that mind at the lotus feet of God. Brahman or Atman is the same as God within. It is dwelling within the shrines of our own heart. Turn your thoughts inward. Then only you get somewhere. And just say, remember that if you do it for half an hour, of course, even if you do it for half an hour in a day, blessed is that half an hour. Of course, in that half an hour, perhaps for 1 second you have thought of God. But blessed is that one moment. But you have to come to a stage when at least most of the time you are either chanting the name of God or thinking of God, feeling His presence, getting a thrill out of it. No, Sri Ramakrishna says, if when you chant the name of God once and you get a thrill out of it, then your job is finished. But in order that you can have that, you have to continue doing it. Now you talk of dry periods. Yes, dry periods. Why? Because we are not doing what we are supposed to do. You see, at one time I complained to Maharaj, my master. Well, you don't do anything for us, you just to give us some teaching and you are not helping us anymore. And I said, how do you know we don't help you? Are you doing what you are supposed to be doing? Practice that. Dry period or anything. Our periods are all dry until we chant the name of God all the time and find some sweetness in that name of God. Just consider how much time people devote themselves to earn a few dollars. And this is something that is eternally abiding. To get a little sense pleasure, how people just work hard. And this you get some abiding joy, infinite happiness. Bhuma, that's infinite happiness. These are not mere thoughts. Matter of experience. And each one of us has the capacity to experience if we only struggle. No, you say, well, yes, I make japa, but I don't like to do it. I get tired. When I go to meditate, so many distractions come. Surely. Practice, practice, practice. Just consider a man like Buddha renounced everything, devoted all days and all nights to contemplation. And he had to do 12 long years before he could attain illumination. And you and I think, oh, just do 2 hours or 3 hours or 5 minutes or half an hour. Why is not God coming to us? and you see that urge, that earnestness, when you feel you can't live without God, when does it come? After long years of struggle and practice. I don't think I've gone away from my subject. The Atman's bondage to the non-Atman springs from ignorance. You see, that ignorance is so thick. Darkness is thick. But such is the Lord's way, such is the Lord's grace, that the darkness may be there in the room for millions of years. One strike of the match, darkness is removed. So this ignorance is from a beginningless time. It has no external cause. You see, nobody gave this ignorance. God didn't give us this ignorance. It is said to be beginningless. It will continue indefinitely until a man becomes enlightened. Until that light comes, this will continue indefinitely. And that's why there is rebirth, death, birth, death, rebirth. This goes on until you become enlightened. But as long as you are a human being, this human birth, this blessed human birth, it becomes blessed when you struggle for that enlightenment. As long as a man remains in this bondage, it subjects him to a long train of miseries, birth, death, sickness, decrepitude, and so forth. This bondage cannot be broken by weapons, or by wind, or by fire, or by millions of acts. Nothing but the sharp sword of knowledge can cut through this bondage. You have to attain that knowledge. That knowledge is not ordinary knowledge, not intellectual understanding, but another consciousness. It is forged by discrimination. Discriminate between the eternal and non-eternal. That is discrimination. What am I? Am I this body? Am I the mind? These are all shifting, always in a flux. There is one treasure, that is Atman, God, the eternal reality. And hold on to that. This forced by discrimination and made keen by purity of heart. What is purity of heart? I have many times explained to you that as long as you feel when you go to think of God you have distraction, your heart is not pure. So you have to struggle and struggle to keep your mind concentrated when you are interested in nothing else but God. Why are there distractions? Because you are interested in so many other things. Naturally, your mind thinks about those objects and things. Whenever you try to concentrate, you think of something that has interested you. But be interested only in God and nothing else. Yes, do the duties of life. Live in the world. Do the duties of life. But know that you are doing all that for worship of God. Giving the fruits of all your actions to God. In your heart of heart you must know that God alone is the reality. Everything else is nothing. Today is, tomorrow is not. This feeling, this sense, this consciousness you have to bring and then devote your whole attention to that one reality. It's forced by discrimination and made keen by purity of heart through divine grace. You see this, take note of this. This great seer philosopher was a jnani, a knower of Brahman. And he says, nothing can be achieved without the grace of God. Now again, you see, what is grace of God? To be more tangible, my master said to me when I asked him, what is the grace of God? He had received his name. When you have a guru, you have received initiation, the name of God, that name of God is the grace of God. That grace is there. But you have to have your mind's grace. In other words, you have the name of God, but chant it. Through your every breathing, with your every breath, chant the name of God. Then you know His grace, you feel His grace. Maharaj used to tell us this. Pray that you may feel that grace. That grace is there. But pray that you may feel that grace. A man must faithfully and devotedly fulfill the duties of life as the scriptures prescribe. He doesn't say, run away from the world. No. Faithfully and devotedly fulfill the duties of your particular status in life. This purifies his heart. You see, without activity, this Shankara also agrees and definitely points out that without action or without movement, also he said, action not merely thing, thought, but movement, the heart doesn't become pure. So that's absolutely necessary. This purifies the heart. A man whose heart is pure realizes supreme Atman. Thereby, he destroys his bondage to the world, root and all. Wrapped in its five coverings, beginning with the physical, which are the products of its own maya, the Atman remains hidden as the water of a pond is hidden by a veil of scum. You see, this Atman or God is covered by five sheaths. And we are identifying ourselves with those five sheaths. Now we have to detach ourselves from the five sheaths. But how? That's where comes the practice of spiritual disciplines when you become absorbed. And you forget your body and everything. So wrapped in its five coverings, beginning with the physical, you see there are these five coverings. This first is that which is made up of food, that is the physical. Annamaya. Then pranamaya, the vital energy. Manomaya, the mind. That which receives impression. Vijnanamaya, the intellect that discriminates. And Anandamaya. Now this Anandamaya, you may say ego, involved ego. But this can be only explained when we are in deep sleep, no dream. We are beyond physical consciousness. There is no mind also there. Because you are not thinking, you are not seeing anything. But there is still the covering because you are unconscious. There is one covering and that is called Anandamaya. It's very interesting. It's called blissful. Covering. Made of bliss because That covering is next to the blissful Atman. Now, again, you see, that must not be identified with Samadhi or Atman. We experience a sort of happiness, bliss, in deep sleep, because at that time we have, that gives us a wonderful rest when you have the deep sleep. So these are the five coverings, and we have to go beyond them. We have to dissociate ourselves from those coverings. When the scum is removed, the pure water is clearly seen. It takes away man's thirst, cools him immediately and makes him happy. When all the five coverings are removed, the pure Atman is revealed. It is revealed as God dwelling within, an unending, unalloyed bliss, as the supreme and self-luminous being. You know, even in the lower, as I said, when you are meditating, when you are chanting the name of God, when there is still the ignorance, there comes a joy in meditation. There comes a joy in chanting the name of God. You find a sweetness. And that happiness, that joy that you experience at such moments, no sense pleasure can give you. And then there is such a thing as ecstasy. Just waves of bliss. And then, of course, when you have this samadhi, when the Atman is fully revealed, that is something. And only then, you see, this highest samadhi, then such men live in the blissful consciousness all the time. I have seen with my eyes, I have felt with my heart, as I lived with these men of God. The wise man who seeks liberation from bondage must discriminate between Atman and non-Atman. In this way he can realize the Atman, which is infinite being, infinite wisdom and infinite love. Thus he finds happiness. The Atman dwells within, free from attachment and beyond all action. You see, the Atman is dwelling within, your true being. With whatever you may be doing, or good or bad or anything, it doesn't affect the Atman. The sinner or the saint, the Atman is the same. Saint is to the saint, Atman is revealed to the sinner, greater and greater ignorance, greater covering. That's all. A man must separate this Atman from every object of experience, as a stalk of grass is separated from its enveloping sheath. Then he must dissolve into the Atman all those appearances which make up the world of name and form. He indeed is a free soul who can remain thus absorbed in the Atman alone. Now may I? Oh, there are questions here already. That's very good when you have questions. But I had a question from the last week, and which I just didn't answer because I didn't know how to answer. And I could not answer because to quote just two words and then what I meant by those words, you know, is very difficult, and which I wrote about 30 years back. But here, if you read the whole paragraph, then you can get the meaning very easily. this is the whole, the question was, what did I mean by constructive reaction? Now, it's very difficult to answer unless I know the reference. Once we become conscious, even dimly, of the Atman, the reality within us, the world shows itself in a very different aspect. You see, this is in the chapter on the problem of evil. Once we become conscious, even dimly, of the Atman, the reality within us, the world shows itself in a very different aspect. Good and evil, pain and pleasure, still exist, but they seem more like the ropes and vaulting horses and parallel bars, which can be used to make our bodies strong. From this standpoint, fortune and misfortune are both mercies, that is to say, opportunities. You see, Swamiji said in one place that happiness and misery both give us experiences. But the experience of misery should not be forgotten, because that is a great teacher. Both are teachers, but misery is a greater teacher. Why? Because if that teaches us in a way that we make a constructive reaction. You see, when misery or misfortune comes, when fortune comes, when misfortune comes, we must know this truth, that this and this both are fleeting. They don't stay. Ordinarily, when a fortune comes, a man is elated. When misfortune comes, he is depressed. But to a spiritual aspirant, one who has got even a glimpse of that reality, they are both experiences, and instead of becoming depressed, we know the ephemeral nature of the objects of experience, and we learn to devote our mind to God more and more. So there is a constructive reaction. A reaction which helps us to break some chain. You see, this is explained in the next. A reaction which helps us to break some chain of our bondage to Maya and bring us nearer to spiritual freedom. Do you get the meaning? Now, here again, you see. Also, I'd never presume to argue with you, but it is hard for me to believe that dry periods, desert waste, in spiritual life are due to lack of intensity or deep yearning. The deeper the yearning, the more horrible the death deprivation. What to do? God removes himself, and that's a fact. The same hand that picks you up, throws you down. This is poetically written, but I don't believe it. You see, when deep yearning for God comes, what do you do? Do you just yearn and not do anything about it? Chant the name of God. Practice what you have been taught. And then through such practices, for years and years, when you have that deep yearning, you can't live without God. You have no other desire. You have become completely desireless. That is the sign of yearning. Completely desireless. Just one desire, that's for God. Well, God doesn't throw you down. How can we overcome the moods of the mind? It's a very practical question. It's very difficult. Very difficult. You see, there is no easy way to purify the mind. You see, how can we overcome the moods of the mind, in other words? How can you get rid of the moods of the mind? And so that, in other words, the mind has to be purified. Sattva. Tamas and Rajas overcome. Those are the moods that are awful. Sattva has to come. Now, in order that you can be established in sattva, you have to struggle, meditate. My answer is to all your problems is the same. Chant the name of God, think of Him, try to be absorbed in Him, know Him to be your only friend, the one reality. And see what happens. And I tell you, it does work. How does one practice making the heart and the lips the same? Very good. Answer is the same. In other words, a crooked man, that is heart one thing and lips another, that means crookedness, can never find the truth of God. So you have to be open-hearted. And you become open-hearted if you make japa, if you meditate, if you think of God, sattva becomes predominant. Then your heart and lips become the same. Swami, in your book, How to Know God, you mentioned that Patanjali differs from Vedanta in believing that Purusha, Atman and Prakriti are two separate entities. Isn't it the experience of illumined souls that there is no separation? And perhaps Patanjali, though a great psychologist, was not illumined? That was a very good question, in a way. You see, there are different stages of experience. We cannot say Patanjali was not illumined. He was illumined, but I'd say he was not highest, he didn't have the highest illumination, no? And so, from Patanjali, we have to come to Vedanta. Then you see this Prakriti or Maya is the power of Brahma, not separate. And so it is true in a way that he was illumined but not highest. He didn't have the highest illumination. But you see Patanjali, I don't know whether he was a real man or saint or what, is very difficult. You see, we get names of two Patanjalis. One is a well-known grammarian, and another is this psychologist. There are opinions about the matter. Some say it was the same Patanjali, but others are of opinion. And I am of opinion that they are two separate ones. But Patanjali, in a sense, was only an editor. He collected the different systems of yoga that existed or were prevalent at the time, were known at the time. And he organized them, collected them, organized them, and did his job most wonderfully well. And then Patanjali was a follower of Sankhya, Kapila. And Kapila believed in duality, and he followed that. But you know, while I went to comment upon Patanjali's yoga aphorisms, I did not follow his philosophy. I followed the Vedanta philosophy, and you will find that how it fits in with his aphorisms. how do you interpret the Freudian expression, death wish? I don't think I have that wish. Yes, yes. Here I say it this way. Will to live and will to die. It's too bad if you don't have death wish. There are these two wills contradictory, Freudian psychology is that. Will to live, what Buddha calls tanha, thirst for life. In other words, thirst for pleasure. Will to die, psychologically I'd call. There is lurking behind every one of us. There is no joy or pleasure in the finite. In other words, there is that lurking desire or will to control. In one hand, the mind says, go and enjoy. Another part of the mind says, no. And this no, to the sense world, to the sense pleasures, is what I'd call will to die. And ultimately, will to die, the death of this ego while living. Is there anything wrong with meditating on the Guru? No, there's nothing wrong, but you have to consider that in that case the Guru is not the man Guru, but God. You have to identify the Guru with God, then only you can meditate on the Guru. And with that awareness, with that consciousness, you see, here is a very interesting problem. An interesting question. You can meditate upon any person, say, whom you love most, your son or your daughter or your husband or your wife. But all the time you have to be aware that that person is one with God. That person is God Himself. If you can keep that awareness, then it's all right. But in the case of an avatar, a divine incarnation, Christ or Krishna or Ramakrishna or Buddha, even if you don't believe Him to be God, you don't have to be aware that He is God. But meditate on Him. And you are meditating on God. Know it or not. That is the difference. Now, any questions from the floor?